Many of you have heard me tell stories before about the summer I spent in Malawi, Africa when I was 19 years old. And usually the stories I tell are of my various adventures, both foolish and fun. Rafting the wild Zambezi River, sneaking into Vic Falls in the middle of the night, dodging bullets in a drive-by shooting in Harare, Zimbabwe. If you haven't heard those stories, I invite you to corner me sometime when you've got a minute. I love to tell those stories. But there are other stories from the 3 months that I tell far less often. Some I've never told, because they're harder. Not only harder because of the heaviness of the content, but also just harder to articulate. Stories that feel bigger, but maybe not crystal clear. This story is one of those. My assignment that summer was to teach Bible study to high school age girls at a boarding school. Now, when we say boarding school in the United States, we think expensive and fancy, a place where rich kids go. But in Malawi, Africa, kids board at school simply because there aren't that many schools. And so they have to attend far away from their homes, and transportation is terrible, so there's no way they could commute back and forth every day. And this boarding school where I was working had bare cinder block walls and open air classrooms, and the girls slept on the floor of their room, 6 to a room. They ate broth and rice around a smoky fire pit. They worked out their math homework on tiny scraps of paper that we'd call trash, or in the dirt of the floor. They were 13 to 16 years old, and if their future was true to current statistics, 1 in 4, 25% of those young girls would die of AIDS before they turned 30. On one particular day, I gathered in a classroom with about 65 girls for our afternoon Bible study time, and it was close to the end of my summer there, and so I knew most of the girls pretty well. I knew which ones were funny and which ones were shy, which ones were fiercely determined and which were a little bit lazy. I knew who would always answer first and who would never answer. I know who loved to play sports, who dreamed of college, who hoped for a boyfriend, who missed her younger siblings. And because I knew them so well, it infuriated me that they had so few resources, such poor chances of climbing out of poverty. And every time I stood in front of them to point to the promises of hope, the promises of faith found in the Bible, I wanted to weep. I fought back tears, thinking that a full quarter of those beautiful girls would be ravaged, decimated by the AIDS virus. That particular afternoon was one of those times for me, a "where is God in this brokenness" kind of a moment. But the girls were in a great mood. Almost as soon as they gathered in the room, sitting on the rough wooden desks, arms wrapped around each other, leaning back to back, crowded into a small hot space, they began to sing one of their favorite songs. Esther called out the words in a loud, clear voice, "Jesus is a winner man," she sang, and the girls repeated it back. And some began to pound out a rhythm on the desks, on their laps, and the song built. They swayed and they clapped, and the room fairly pulsed with their energy as their voices rose to tumble over one another, and they split into parts and harmonized without any discernible direction, simply familiarity. And then they were dancing and laughing and still singing, and it was a song of triumph, of Jesus who could, who did, they believe, defeat every single evil in the world. And my tears were pushed back, along with the specter of death. And I can't really articulate exactly what it felt like, except the whole place felt full and alive and holy, just thick with the presence of God. And y'all, if I heard him, it was a whisper beneath their soaring voices spoken to my broken heart. "I am here." Y'all probably know I love to tell a good story. And the best stories I found are the stories of God, not just the ones in the Bible, but maybe even more, the stories of God embedded in our everyday lives, mine and yours. And so I'm excited about this summer series, Faith IRL, Faith in Real Life. I'm excited about the potential for the community and the encouragement that will come from simply hearing each other's stories. And I'm praying that we'll have so many stories to share, we'll be scrambling to fit them all in. Joshua spoke last week about the way that sharing our stories builds real community, where we know one another, where we are known. And if you've experienced that in whatever setting in your life, then you know how powerful sharing stories can be. Besides creating real community, stories also provide real encouragement. Consider the psalm Mary read just a few minutes ago. Psalm 77 begins as a lament. It begins with the psalmist crying out to God. Verse 1 literally says, "I cry aloud to God that he may hear me." And the psalmist isn't in a great place, spiritually, emotionally, in terms of his faith. He calls it the day of my trouble, but isn't more specific than that about what exactly is going on. But whatever it is, it's keeping him up at night. He writes, "In the night, my hand is stretched out without wearying. My soul refuses to be comforted." He moans, his spirit faints. And then he says, "I was so troubled that I could not speak." In verses 7 to 10 of that psalm, we get this series of questions, questions that are by no means exclusive to this psalmist. These are the age-old questions and the modern-day questions of every dark night or long, dark season of the soul. The core questions the psalmist asks are, have been, will likely be again, our questions. Where is God in all of this? Does God still love? Are his promises real? Has God forgotten us? Is he angry? Has God changed? The psalmist raises all these big and hard and honest questions, just pours them out there in the psalm. And then, maybe you notice this, the psalmist never answers those questions, those big, hard, honest questions that are sometimes our questions. This psalm doesn't answer those questions. Instead, it tells a story. There's this shift in mood at verse 11, in genre, really. The psalm turns from lament to story. And the psalmist, this questioning, troubled, hurting human, says right in the middle of that dark night, or maybe 100 dark nights later, "I will call to mind the deeds of the Lord. I will remember your wonders of old. I will meditate on all your work and muse on your mighty deeds." The psalmist is looking for God in his right here and now and feeling alone. He has a whole bunch of questions he can't answer, problems and pain he can't solve. But what he can do is remember, recount, recall the story of where God has been, of the footprints he's seen, how God has shown up before. And in a kind of fake it till you make it move, he just starts to tell the story. The story of God moving in a mighty way, waters trembling and standing back, thunder and whirlwind and earthquake, a path through the sea and a people delivered. And here's the thing. The psalmist's questions hang unanswered in the air. There is no neat and tidy turning of doubt into certainty. And the psalmist's daytime problems, we can assume, still remain problems. And yet the story's been told once more of God showing up in the midst of the hard and the broken. A story of God's persistence and power. A story of God delivering his people. And the psalmist tells a general story, a story we can find in the Bible, the Exodus story, a story that is shared by all the people of God. But y'all, it could have just as easily been a particular story, a personal story that pointed to, that brought to mind the deeds of the Lord, his wonders and his works. A story that once told could provide us all encouragement in our own similar and dissimilar circumstances. Have you heard of Al Letson? He's an American poet, playwright, performer, journalist, radio host. And on the surface, Al Letson and I don't have a lot in common. He's a little older than me, male, African American, born in New Jersey, which is a long way from Texas. But Al Letson traveled once to Malawi. And he tells this story of visiting a prison created by Malawi's corrupt dictator. And when he gets to that prison, he finds that it's full of young boys, imprisoned, only 14 to 20 years old. It's just full of them, locked up there. And upon seeing them, he's heartbroken. Listen with me.